I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Last week, we discussed folklore. Today, we get more specific. This is what we call an urban legend. Contemporary folklore passed on as a true story. Something you might have heard about mixing pop rocks and soda.
Supposedly, your stomach and your intestines burst.
Voila, still alive. Mr. Cross, please.
It's going to explode! Somebody call 911!
They are the legends we've all heard.
Gang members drive around at night with their headlights off. And when someone goes to flash on their high beams to warn them, they kill them.
The stories we've all told.
Guy and a girl and they're parked out in the woods. The guy steps out and the girl starts to hear these scratching noises. It's her dead boyfriend hung from a tree.
The tales we've all listened to.
Isn't there another story about a guy with an axe hiding in a woman's backseat?
My mom still checks the backseat before getting into a car.
But just because it never happened doesn't mean it never will.
Welcome to Rewatchability. We're a podcast on the Entertainment One Podcast Network. I'm Robert LaRonde. With me, as always, is
J.M. McNabb.
And we have a special episode for you. Like we say every week, we acknowledge that, but we also have a special guest, and we'll get to all of that just after we thank our Patreons. Yes, those are the people who give us a little bit of money each month, $1, $3, $5, and that helps keep the podcast going. And in return, you get the podcast early, you get it ad free, and sometimes you get bonus content like bonus episodes. And I think we're going to do a commentary soon, so sign up to Patreon, and you'll be there when it hits, when it drops. Drops? Remember when drops meant to excise something from something? Now it means to put something out.
What?
Never mind. Okay, so today we have a very big movie to talk about, a legendary movie, you might say. And we have a special guest as well, our old pal, Jordan Armstrong. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Excited to be playing the role of Blaine today.
You are his understudy.
I'm his understudy.
Yeah.
It's, for today's show. You've been waiting to go on for 450 plus episodes as Blaine.
Rehearsed the lines again and again and again.
You've worn the Blaine haircut for like 5 years.
I have cut my hair, really just spiked it up at the top.
You hired two guys to give him the Nancy Kerrigan treatment, which is why he's not on the show today.
I just had to get on. Like, I'd waited for so long. When was I going to get my moment, you know?
Devious.
Take my destiny into my own hands.
Well, Jordan, you brought a movie to us this week. You wanted to talk about Urban Legend, the 1998 movie directed by Jamie Blanks, starring Jared Leto, Alicia Witt, and Pacey from Dawson's Creek. So why did you think of this movie, Jordan?
Because I watched it recently.
What?
I rewatched it recently. Last week.
Okay. So yeah. You basically wanted to do the minimal amount of effort possible for this podcast.
I did. Well, you know, I put other movies on there.
That's true.
But you hadn't seen them, so
that's fair.
They didn't make it.
And also, I will say, in my defense, too, you suggested doing a Studio Ghibli movie, and all my kids do is watch Studio Ghibli movies right now. So if I wanted to put in the least amount of effort, I would have signed on for that. But I thought this would be a good one, too.
I think it is a good one. And I felt like it was a fresh rewatch. Like it was like,
okay,
the night, I forget when you asked me to be on the show. It was so exciting. One of the best days of my
pandemic. You were literally watching Urban Legend at the moment.
Yeah, I think I had watched it like the night before or something. So
you were like, if only I had a forum to talk about this movie. If only somebody was listening.
Yeah.
And now here's your chance.
This is my chance.
Jordan said Rob's name three times in front of the bathroom mirror. Mm-hmm. And got the phone call.
Which is the only Urban Legend that I remembered.
Yeah,
I didn't remember most of the urban legends in the movie Urban Legends. Like, I guess they were all real, but I was hanging out at the wrong campfires, I guess.
Maybe some of them are urban legends of urban legends. Like, they're not real.
Well, I took the liberty of doing some research since I didn't need to rewatch the movie for the second time in a week. But they're all like real urban legends that I wasn't cool enough to know. And I think that was my experience rewatching this movie, is that I remember seeing it. It came out in like late 90s, I guess.
Right. 1998. Yeah.
1998. So going to see it with my friends, young teenage high school Jordan was so scared of this movie because I was so easily scared and I wasn't cool then. And I just wasn't cool enough to know all of the urban legends that they were talking about. So I didn't get the movie either. And I was terrified the whole time.
Right. So you saw it for the first time in the theaters?
Yeah.
And was it like a communal thing? You went with friends?
Yeah.
Okay.
Peer pressured into it. I did not want to go see it. I don't know what other movies came out in 1998, but I'm sure I had a list of them that I would have preferred to go see.
And do you like generally like horror movies, or is this sort of like an excursion outside of your comfort zone?
I like horror movies now. As of like I'm 3 months into liking horror movies.
Okay.
I feel like. Oh. I live alone. I'm very scared of the dark. So it's not a great combo, but during the pandemic, I just wanted to feel things.
Mm.
So I started watching them and got really into them.
All right. All right.
Nice.
Okay. JM, what about you? When was the first time that you saw Urban Legend?
I saw it. You know, I didn't see it in the theater.
What?
Yeah.
What was wrong? Was the theater closed for delousing or renovations, or
were you just less cool than me even?
Well, definitely, yeah. But I don't know why I didn't see it. I think maybe I was like a little burnt out on that kind of I hear a siren in the background. Probably another grisly murder.
Oh, no.
That's probably just an ambulance for the...
Did you hear the one about the podcast host who heard a siren and he thought it was a grisly murder, but he didn't do anything?
But it was really just like a fire truck because the A&W had a grease fire. Worst urban legend ever. Yeah, I don't know why. I honestly don't know why I didn't see this movie in the theater. I think I saw it on video. I think I rented it when it came out. And I didn't really remember anything about it other than certain, you know, moods and actors that were in it. I didn't remember like the ultimate resolution of it, because it's kind of, I mean, we'll get into it, but it's a little blander than some of the other ones. I think part of the reason why I didn't rush to see it in the theater was because I was a little burned by this genre before. Not burned, but like I was growing a little weary of it. Like I loved Scream.
You love Scream.
And then I rushed out to see I Know What You Did Last Summer, and I didn't like that as much. And then when this came out, I was like, I'll just watch Scream 2. Like, I don't think I need to see this. And
right.
I did watch it on video, and I remembered liking it okay. Like, I was excited to watch it again for this podcast. What about you, Rob?
Yeah. We rented this one, I think, me and some friends, and it was not very outstanding in my memory. Yeah, I mean, it came right at the glut of all of those teen horror movies, and specifically like the Scream genre. And this obviously owes a lot to Scream. I mean, it just sort of seemed bland. I didn't know as many of the actors as I did in the other teen comedy movies. Like, I wasn't really familiar
teen
with
horror. Jared Leto.
Yeah, sorry, teen horror.
This same, was not a
comedy.
Same,
and horror
same
is just
genre. It's
two sides of the same coin.
But like saying teen is already like a synonym for horror, and I feel like
and comedy.
Yeah.
Right.
So you could just call it a teen movie. I think
it's
we
a
all
teen
get
movie.
It.
Yeah. You know, it was okay. I think that I was annoyed that it was teens. I think at that point I was into
you were a teen.
Yeah,
and he
exactly.
was over it. That's a lot of teen.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I thought that all of my peers were stupid, right? So I wanted to watch horror movies about, like, adult killers, you know, and, you know, having, like, you know, adult murder problems. So not this, like, you know, kid stuff. You know,
that's true.
About people yeah. older than me.
You know, that's a good point, too. Like, that this came out when I would have started high school as well. And I think that that's was probably part of it. Like,
yeah,
I probably became more segmented from like the crowd that was really excited about Urban Legend. And I was like more hanging out with the kids that were excited about Starship Troopers, you know.
You had to pick one. You had yep. to pick one. But so, yeah, it wasn't a big movie for me, but I do recognize that it's sort of become an iconic movie in a lot of ways, you know, maybe just because it brings the sort of urban legends back into horror or whatever. And there's been more movies that sort of follow that template a little bit more than the Scream template as well. So, yeah, I was up for watching it. So,
yeah, well, it's also it's the poster is on the cover of our friend Alex's book.
Right. That's right. Yeah. yeah.
And I went back and I read that chapter to see if it would shed some new light on it that would make me appreciate the movie in a whole other way.
And
it did not.
Oh.
It was a good chapter and it was informative, but it did not.
Didn't win you over.
Well, you know, we'll get into how I feel about the movie. But
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's get into it. So Urban Legend, it starts with a girl in a car. And she's, you know, she's listening to the radio and like people did in 1998, she gets tired of that. She wants to put a tape in. So she reaches back to put in a tape and she almost gets into an accident. What we've learned from this week and last week when we watched Breakdown is don't try to get things from the back seat. It's it's dangerous. Keep your eyes on the road.
It was an epidemic in the 90s.
Yeah.
People reaching in the back seat for stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And another parallel, both the bad guys in those movies end up off a bridge at the bottom of a bridge.
Yeah. And also, yeah, why would she's alone on a car ride. Why would you put all of your tapes in the back seat?
Yeah. Put them on the passenger seat.
So that the person who eventually hid back there could maybe choose the music.
Oh, yeah. He's also like a DJ.
Well, that's the rule, right? One person gets to drive and the person in the back gets to choose the music and kill the person who drives.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rules of the road. But so she's driving down the road. She's singing to some Bonnie Tyler, Total Eclipse of the Heart, RIP Jim Steinman. And she runs out of gas. So she pulls into the gas station and the gas attendant is really friggin' creepy. It is Brad Dourif, who he is amongst many roles. He is Chucky. Mm-hmm. He's in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He's a very intense guy. And she's like a little scared of him. You can sort of tell. And he wants her to come inside because there's a problem with her credit card and she doesn't want to. And she freaks out and like sort of.
Well, he's got a stutter like Billy in Cuckoo's Nest.
That's right. Yeah.
I had a stutter as a kid, and honestly, I'm terrifying.
We know.
I do. I feel bad for Brad Dourif, though. I don't know what his celebrity status was at the time, but like he's uncredited, and it's, you know, another stuttering role. Like, and he has to be like the creepy guy at the beginning. I don't know.
I
felt bad. I'm just glad Deadwood came along a few years after this.
I feel like it's got to be like a tribute because first of all. The character in the car, her last name is Mancini, which is right, the same name as the guy who directed and created the Chucky things. But also, I mean,
Don Mancini.
But also, he's such like a horror icon, I think, Brad Dourif. He's just like an icon. I feel like they put him in there and they uncredited him so that you wouldn't be like,
because it's a cameo.
When's Brad Dourif going to show up, you know?
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
It's
a tribute.
I was like a little bit thrown off because I saw him and of course I recognized him, but like I didn't see his name anywhere. Then I looked on the IMDb and I couldn't find him. And I was like, that's Brad Dourif, isn't it? Come on, yeah. What's happening?
And he was in Dune, as was Alicia Witts.
Right, yeah. But so it turns out that he is trying to warn this woman about somebody who is in the back seat.
Stop! Someone's in the back seat!
And she drives away after like kicking him through the gas station window. And we see rising from the backseat this figure with a double-headed axe. And the next thing we know, the axe is coming through the window, which is kind of amazing because you don't think that they'd be able to get the leverage to swing that hard in that small vehicle, right? You like really need like,
well, I feel like that was the moment that lost me a bit because I love that opening scene. It's so fun. And you know, as soon as you see him in the gas station, that he's not the killer because the stutter makes him almost sympathetic.
For sure.
And you knowing that the film is called Urban Legends and that the backseat killer is an urban legend, you know instantly what they're doing, and then they draw it out so nicely, and you know exactly what's going to happen, and you're just waiting for him to yell as she drives away, "There's someone in the backseat!" It's so fun.
He's so good.
Yeah, it was so
great.
He's
so good.
He is.
But then the axe, the physics of the beheading were really confusing for me.
And also, double-headed axes. Who is using those? You know, like, lumberjack's going to cut two trees at once? Come on!
Yeah, you swing it back and forth like a pendulum.
It's silly. Cut to Pendleton U. It is a university with all the kids, and we've got all these young people there just hanging out at the coffee shop.
Let's put the word young in quotes, shall we? Because a lot of them are like in their mid-30s.
Yeah. And we're at U of T in Toronto.
Yeah, that's right. The first scene was filmed at Diablo's coffee shop.
Oh, was it?
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, they didn't.
And then we see Hard House a bunch.
Yes, definitely.
But they have like, clearly they brought in, because that's not what the coffee shop looked like in real life. They brought in like the 90s movie and TV comfy couches, you know, like the big throne kind of couches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're talking about urban legends, and in particular, this urban legend about a building on campus called Stanley Hall, where apparently somebody went crazy and then killed everybody with an axe, maybe with a knife. They killed everybody. And
I think it was an axe. There's a lot of axe stuff happening.
You think the axe must be symbolic, but then this movie plays kind of fast and loose with things. But
it is weird too, because not to jump too far ahead, but like this whole Stanley Hall murder thing becomes like a running thread, and it's like the urban legend of the school. But they say like, oh, it's an urban legend at all the schools. But it is like a well documented tragedy, as we find out with the prison newspapers and stuff. So it's not really an urban legend. It was an urban event.
It's actual news.
Like that. The urban legend of the Manson murders.
Like, I get that the internet wasn't quite as it is now back in 98, but there were still like libraries. There was, you know, microfiche and stuff. Well, like, they could have looked into this a bit better.
I do think that it might speak to something about that particular age of the people in the movie. Like, those people they're kind of smart. They're sort of adults. They're going to university, but they're kind of dumb still, too. Like, they're also kind of children. They don't really know how to research or to bother researching things and just
Rob,
sort of
they're almost
things.
40.
That's true. They're older
in their
than
early
you
50s.
Yeah. That's fair. But in this group, we have Alicia Witt. She plays Natalie. There is also Jared Leto. He is a student journalist named Paul. There's another guy. I don't know his name. We also have Rebecca Gayhart as... Is it Brenda?
Brenda. Yeah.
Brenda. And Tara Reid is in there as well.
Well, the guy who is Parker is the guy who is Lex Luthor on Smallville. I'm
right.
Sure.
Yeah. You just picture him with a bald cap and you see it.
Yeah. And he is, it feels like he traded parts with someone. Like right before a shooting of the movie, because he's clearly like, I mean, I haven't seen a lot of Smallville, but I think he's kind of, yeah, he plays more of that kind of like brooding guy. But in this, he's kind of Matthew Lillard and Jamie Kennedy's characters from Scream smushed into one guy. So like he has to act very like theatrically and broad, and it's
he was originally supposed to play painful. The gas station attendant, probably,
right?
Or the janitor.
Yeah.
They found.
Yeah, and yeah. Brad Dourif was supposed to be that guy, and they're like, it's perfect. He's what, 61? It's fine.
They'll buy it.
They'll buy it. He has a youthful energy.
He's doing an extra year. Year five.
Some people take longer. Nothing wrong with that. Mm. Yeah, well, Jared Leto has written a story about this murder that has happened in the SUV. And they're all like, oh, my God, this girl went to school here. And the administration of the university, Sir John Neville, he is not happy. And they're actually like physically taking the newspapers from the racks so the story doesn't spread.
I love John Neville.
He's great.
Say that. And he, I think he lived here in the later part of his life, here being Toronto, where they filmed this movie. And it's great to see him pop up in stuff like this.
Absolutely.
It adds some dignity to the proceedings.
For sure. And he definitely plays the part of like a stodgy old dean very well.
Yeah. And he is, we should mention, he is one of four employees in this entire university.
There's one dean, there's one professor, there's one security guard in charge of the entire campus.
Yep.
It sounds about right.
And a janitor.
Funded schools, man.
That's it. One janitor.
What are they spending our tuition on?
I feel like the janitor and the security guard probably also have to teach some classes because there's not enough people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, also, all the kids are like, they're talking about urban legends. There's like a murder that may have been inspired by an urban legend. And then they all seem to be majoring in urban legends.
Yes, that's right.
Like the first class we see them in is Robert Englund. Freddy Krueger himself is teaching urban legend class where he's making kids like eat Pop Rocks and drink soda. And that's like, how much money are they spending on this? At the school,
right?
they've got like 2.5 employees. Their teacher's giving kids Pop Rocks.
Had those before?
Yeah, they're Pop Rocks. They crackle in your mouth.
Eat some. Thirsty? Oh, what's wrong? Something you might have heard about mixing Pop Rocks and soda?
Well, supposedly, your stomach and your intestines, everything burst.
Really? Anyone you know die this way?
Mikey.
I think they also filmed that at Convocation Hall. So that's like, you know, a 2,000-person venue for that class.
Yeah. It may be sad because watching it, I remembered that not long before the pandemic, in the fall of 2019... I went to that Nick Cave show at Convocation Hall.
Oh, nice.
Was that the last concert before a lockdown?
I think it probably was. Yeah. And I went super, there was no assigned seating. So I went super early and waited. So you could see where I was sitting because I was in the fourth row of Convocation Hall, as close to Freddy Krueger as Joshua Jackson was, is where I was sitting.
Whoa, you sat in Pacey's seat.
Yeah. But it was weird to see that in Convocation Hall. It was kind of cool. I've seen a lot of good. I saw Stephen Wright there.
Oh, nice!
Oh, wow, I don't think I've ever seen a show there. I've seen a graduation there, which is appropriate.
Yeah,
yeah, I've seen those too.
I saw Henry Rollins.
Oh, cool!
And a weird play about Galileo Galilei.
Okay. Mm.
It's versatile. It's what we're saying. It's versatile. There's more to college life than just learning about urban legends. You also have to deal with your gothy roommate who is always like
who has
hooking
so much,
up.
So much sex. I don't know.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there's absolutely not. But like when your roommate is there.
No, that's not cool. Like this woman doesn't even put a sock on the door handle. That's the roommate code.
Yeah. There's no reason, if you live in a place, there's no reason that you should have to knock before you come in. Your roommate, you need to develop a better system so that they know to maybe give it a minute.
And the gothy roommate is played by Danielle Harris,
mm-hmm.
who, of course, was in the later Halloween movies,
mm-hmm.
and Roseanne.
Yes.
And I think she just came back. I don't watch The Conners. But
because you're on Roseanne's side?
I'm Team Roseanne all the way. No, but I did see like on Twitter or whatever that her character came back. Yeah, I mean, she's a great actress.
Yeah, she plays the part well.
I've seen, and it's that nice was a to see her there.
Real person.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, she doesn't feel like No, she does. I was gonna say she doesn't feel like too stereotypical of a goth, but she does. Like, they're like, her room is
she
painted black and has
and
candles.
Looks at, like, imagoth.com.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. Goth, goth for goth.
But she's also, I don't know, like, I think it's, we don't get enough to like fully see her as a real person, but it, I don't know, it could have been worse, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, all of,
I mean, we do glaze over her death later pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really just get over that.
Well, they get over all of them, kind of. I mean, not Pacey, because Pacey's the first one to go. And also, he's Pacey, right? So
okay, let's talk about that.
Okay.
Well, first, there's a great Dawson's Creek joke.
Wow, great, yeah. Dawson's Creek joke. I mean, he gets in the car. He invites her. She's feeling down or something, and he's like, "Oh, I'll, you know, let's hang out. I'll, you know, I'm good. I'm a good listener." And so they go down to his car, and he starts up the car, and the Dawson's Creek theme is playing, and he quickly turns it off. Thank you.
It was a good moment.
It was. I don't know. I mean, for me, like, it's a bit too meta, and also, like, that's a joke that, like, we would make on this podcast. It's not a joke you should be making in a feature film, for Christ's sakes.
I liked it because I almost wondered if, like, that was something the editors did. Mm-hmm. Like, they needed a song for him to turn off, and they're like, I'm just putting the fucking Dawson's Creek thing.
Yeah. It was like 4 in the morning. They're so tired. They just want to go to bed, and they go, this is funny right now. Yeah. You don't care if it's going to be still funny tomorrow.
Let's put the fucking Creek theme in. That'll show that fucking Pacey loser.
They should update it for modern audiences with the theme song from The Affair, I guess.
Yeah. But so he, in the car, he makes a gross move on Natalie. And she's like, no. And then he says he's going to go piss in the woods, you know, after calling her a bitch. And then...
Classic urban legend.
Classic urban legend. I think that one might be true.
Oh, we didn't even talk about his hair, because he's got the crazy, it looks like, it looks like he traded hair with Jared Leto.
Wait, what was the movie, what were the other movies he had that hair for?
I think it's Cruel Intentions, isn't it?
Oh yeah. I think he's sitting in the bed with his arm around each of, what is it,
The Intentions,
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and
yes,
and Selma Blair.
Yeah,
right.
I know my movies. I know what's
you,
up.
You, that's why we called you.
I know.
But yeah, no, his hair looks bad. But yeah, I think he had to have it. So when he dies, you don't really feel anything for him, because you're like,
he's not really Pacey.
Yeah, and his hair is really bad. So
yeah,
and he's a jerk.
He is a real jerk. I mean, he definitely. I mean. If you can earn such a thing in a movie, which is like, you know, how the sort of movie functions, then he kind of does earn it, because he is a total creepster. But he goes for a piss and then he doesn't come back. And
well,
then
I got to interrupt here for a second, because I do think that it's kind of weird how quickly, like, the sort of like teen horror cycle, to, you know, paraphrase Alex's book again, which again is a great book. But to have Scream come out a few years before, and to have so many movies try to capitalize on the success of Scream, like, it's kind of funny to look back on it and see that, like, horror movies didn't, in a way, like, they took the wrong lessons from Scream. Like, they didn't become more introspective or, like, more experimental. Like, they took sort of a lot of the superficial elements of Scream, but then, like, fell into the same traps. Like, so we have, you know, Pacey, like, literally says, like, I'll be right back, as he gets out of the car before he goes, which is a thing they specifically call out as, like, a tired cliche in Scream. So right. I don't know. It's just funny that, like, it took so little time for, like, the Scream trend to kind of devolve into the same tropes that were being picked apart in Scream.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, he becomes the fate of that urban legend where, you know, the boyfriend is hanging and you hear him on the car, and then she drives away. And then it sort of, there's like a pulley system, which is kind of neat. I mean, that's, you know, I like pulleys.
Ingenious.
Yeah.
Ingenious of the murderer.
But it kills him. So.
It does kill him. Although yeah. I feel like the fun thing about this movie is that it's very episodic. There's just going to be a bunch of urban legends mm-hmm. in a row. And there's an odd, like, it's a lot of characters. There's a lot of potential murder suspects. And I watched this on a Netflix party. I have a standing weekly movie watching Netflix party. And we had a great time trying to predict who the murderer was.
But you saw it. You saw it in 98.
Yeah, but okay, here's the thing. I was going to save this till the end. I didn't remember that I had seen it until I think I didn't remember until like the final scene. And I was oh my God, I know. How do I know it's going to? Oh, I have seen this. And then the memories came flooding back of being peer pressured. I think we'd gone to see one movie and then snuck into the second movie as you do on like Toonie Tuesday.
I'm calling the cops.
It was please call them. I'm very lonely. I would love anyone to come by my apartment. Tell them that I snuck into a movie in 1998. I'll go to jail.
Welcome, Benno.
But what we got really excited about.
You owe Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker $8.50.
the ticket taker at the Cineplex Odeon in Scarborough like comes to testify at my massive trial.
Joshua Jackson comes in.
He's there. He's there.
Has to dye his hair. Yeah,
we recreate the whole thing. It becomes an urban legend. I bring Pop Rocks and Coke, but because they killed off Pacey so early in the movie, we were all convinced that he was the murderer somehow.
Right.
And spent the whole movie trying to be like, and you see, so he plotted
Pacey
to because he was like, who are the biggest names? At that time, he probably would have been one of the biggest.
Yeah, absolutely.
For like the demographic they were going for.
Absolutely.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Like Jared Leto was not a big star. Like he would people knew him from My So-Called Life, but that was about it. Like this was his first big starring role, I think.
Yeah.
It was before, like, he wasn't even that intense or creepy in this. I was like, oh, maybe.
He was a little bit intense and creepy.
He was, but it wasn't to the point where I was like, I never want to watch him in anything again.
No, yeah. It's definitely like.
That would come later.
He's growing into his creepiness. That happened, but there are the seeds of it here. And even in his character, like this slimy sort of journalist who has no ethics. Like at one point he says, like, I dropped out of journalism ethics because it wasn't helping my GPA.
It is weird. Like I know, you know, he's playing kind of the Skeet Ulrich part. I know I keep bringing up Scream, but like, and I know all of these kids in all of these movies are like good looking, but like, he's got like those piercing young Jared Leto eyes. Like it's weird that no one is like, why are you writing for the school newspaper? Like you should be a catalog model or something. Like you should be wearing jean jackets in a Sears booklet.
Yeah.
Denim on denim.
Yeah. Denim on denim.
I know that this is a really bad time for you, but I gotta ask you a couple of questions.
Oh no, I'm not doing any interviews.
Hey, if it makes you feel any better, I don't want to talk about Tosh, okay? I just wanted to know if you could tell me a little bit about this.
How did you get that?
I contacted Michelle's high school, your high school. Now, why didn't you tell me you knew her?
She could exploit her death more than you already have.
But more people die, like the roommate, she dies. And basically, right. Natalie comes back and mid her roommate being strangled, and she thinks that the roommate's having sex because there's no sock on the door either way. And she doesn't even look, doesn't even turn on the light. And her friend is, or roommate, probably not friend, is murdered while she's in the room. And then she wakes up and there's blood on the walls.
Oh yeah, what does it say?
It says, don't you wish you turned the lights on or something like that.
Yeah. Aren't you glad you had
aren't you glad you didn't turn the lights on?
Yeah. And I was like a little bit, I don't know, this part also pulled me out because I was like, okay, like I know that they established that the person is having sex in the room at the same time, and so that's already established. I still don't think that I buy that, like, somebody can be murdered in the same room as somebody who is trying to go to sleep.
You'd hear it. Even if you'd never had sex before, I feel like you instinctively know the difference between sex sounds and death sounds. I think that there's like, I've never heard death sounds, but
though,
I think that I would
maybe the goth girl, she might
maybe
go for the death sounds, you know?
Maybe that is.
It could be a thing.
Yeah. But her sound, her sex sounds are just goth.
Danzig.
It's always awkward when someone says that during sex.
I know, right?
But and then more people die too. John Neville, he bites it. He gets like a razor to his shin.
Oh yeah. Oh, but even before that, like there's that crazy scene where John Neville, the security guard chief, who again, like there's four people tops working at this entire university.
No one else.
No one else. It's always these.
We see at small least 10 other students in that class, but so 10 students, four teachers. It's a very, it's a small, like it takes a village.
Well, that's, it's more one-on-one. It's better, you know?
Yeah. It's like, it's like one of those like hippie, like alternative.
It's an alternative school university.
Yeah. You get a degree and smile.
But there's like a scene where they're talking to Alicia Witt and are basically like, just ignore everything she said about like there being someone else in the room. And they're basically just like, yeah, just suck it up. And then they just like walk away.
Yeah.
And it's like, can you imagine like not, you know, offering her some kind of counseling or something?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I was watching with my wife and she pointed out that like it accidentally makes an incisive point about like the length that academic institutions go to like cover up.
Yeah.
Crimes on campus. And I don't think
to cover up a crime that didn't even happen on their campus.
Right.
Yeah. That's the highway. It doesn't
happens
count.
On the highway. Like
right. Yeah, you have no jurisdiction over the highway.
It's not them.
But having them like, you know, literally stealing the newspapers and like trying to say and then there's the scene where like the people that the paramedics or whatever are wheeling out the body of the goth roommate with her wrists bleeding through the sheets, like wheeling them through the hallways, like past all the classes.
They have to do the whole tour of the university.
Yeah.
And also,
oh, not that way. That's the daycare. Sorry.
My bad.
Also, the professor bites it as well. Freddy Krueger, he dies as well.
But right,
and they think
right?
It is him too.
Yeah,
because he has
we
like
have to
a,
believe that it is him.
Yeah,
I can't keep track of like the order people die in because it seems almost like arbitrary. And at a certain point, like they're killing people that I don't know why they're killing them. I don't know why John Neville has to die.
He had stuff to do.
He had to go home.
He works hard. He's
old.
A selfless
he was
administrator.
His contract gave them 2 days of shooting. That was it. And a stuntman got his calf slid and fell on those spikes.
But also,
we also didn't mention that the, again, one of just a handful of employees here, the security guard, the lone law enforcement agent looking into this series of grisly murders, played by Loretta Devine, is like her one character trait is that she idolizes Pam Grier.
Great character trait, but
and then also insists a little on sketchy. No police. Like spends, she actively is like no police. Or is it her? Or is it the dean?
Yeah, I think the dean's like no police. He's like no police, no teachers, no parents.
On the eve of this anniversary of this gruesome murder that is in fact, not urban legend.
Yeah, you don't really have anniversaries for urban legends. They're harder to pin down.
They
exact
do. They
dates.
Have whole parties.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, yeah, because we find out that Robert Englund's character was also like the sole survivor of that massacre that they thought was in urban legend after finding a newspaper. And you see a picture of him and it's like the 80s. Like it's not that long ago.
Yeah.
1998.
Yeah.
he's
oh, and also it's, there's the creepy janitor who, you know,
right.
Again,
who
probably
hands
has
the
to pick
newspaper,
up a few classes.
Like as a clue?
Julian Richings.
Yeah. So who is he? Because I feel like he's in every Canadian movie.
He's a Canadian. I mean, he's a British actor, but he's lives in Canada. He was sort of most famously in Cube. Actually, I was in a playwriting circle at the Toronto Public Library. And at the end, there was like a big presentation where they read our work. And Julian Richings read all of our work. He read my work. And Johnny Walker was in that as well.
Oh, that's so cool.
It was cool. Yeah, he's always in creepy movies being creepy people.
Yeah.
He was in American Gods, X-Men 3, I think, Stardust.
Was he in an Outer Limits episode?
Oh, probably. Yeah. I mean, he's such like a, he's got like such a distinct look, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. He shows up anywhere you want somebody really creepy.
He's good. We also didn't mention the fact that like when they kind of realize that the murders are being based on urban legends, like they go to the library and take out the encyclopedia of urban legends.
Yeah.
It's under you.
Well, where else do these urban legends come from?
Are they still urban legends when they're that well documented?
Oh.
Yeah, that was weird. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I do kind of love the setup of this movie. I love the idea of like urban legends and like deaths being connected by urban legend. But there is something about this, like the fact that they're all so well documented that kind of ruins it. Like, it's not that someone's like, oh yeah, I heard about that urban legend. Like, and someone else like, oh yeah, I heard about that one. And they're kind of piecing it together. It's literally like a book that she reads in the library, or like a newspaper that the janitor has for some reason. Like, it's, I don't know. It takes away the mystery a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like they started off in a good place. Again, that opening scene is so fun. If the whole movie had been that, and then Pacey's character, like he is embodying the kind of character that we expect to be a victim of an urban legend, or like he like plays the role mm-hmm. of someone in an urban legend. And then that all kind of stops. They kind of lose it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to rewrite this whole movie, I think. Better. We haven't even talked about Tara Reid's character yet.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah, the radio DJ.
Like, this whole subplot, she's the most fascinating character in the movie, and fact, did her own stunts.
Wow.
Oh.
She's pretty good.
But she like in her radio show, she's also addressing urban legends.
Right. Yeah, like
the birth control aspirin, the like mm-hmm. I forget what it's called, but the vagina that grasps on to the penis during sex and then they can't detach.
Yeah. Yeah, it's everybody's talking about urban legends at that school.
There's so many layers. It's an onion skin of urban legends in this.
It's all they have in that town. They don't have a movie theater, so they have to entertain themselves by talking about urban legends. I heard this guy fell out of a tree once. Oh, tell me more. Yeah. Well, let's sort of skip towards the end, because there is a twist to this. Alicia Witt, Natalie, goes to Stanley
Hall. Can
we put
twist in quotations? Just
yeah.
Real quick?
Yeah. Twist. And
there's a thing that happens.
She goes to Stanley Hall, where this massacre allegedly happened. And there she finds a whole bunch of bodies. All the bodies of the people who have died earlier, pretty much. Oh,
and
are
by
there.
The way, died for no reason. Like, there's yeah. no motive to kill any of those people.
There's a brief motive with Pacey, and that's it. There's no other. Well, I guess there's a whole other subplot that gets so convoluted where, what's her name? Natalie. And mm-hmm. her friend were driving and killed a person.
Right.
Well, I guess Natalie tells Jared Leto that even that made no sense. But
it made no sense, and it was brought in too late.
Yeah.
That,
like,
I spent
her...
half the movie being like, why is she so upset about, why is she, like, she should be upset about her roommate's murder. Why is she still like,
right.
She's a psychopath. She has no empathy.
Another thing my wife pointed out is, like, where is she sleeping? Like, is she still going back to that room where this murder
took
place? The
bed is still covered in blood.
Yeah. But also, like, wait, isn't it a thing if your roommate commits suicide, then you pass school for free or something like that? There's a movie about that, isn't there?
Yeah, that's the dead man on campus.
Rob, I think that's an urban legend.
Oh
no, but Alicia Witt says that her and Natasha Gregson Warner were friends, and that like one night they, as part of like an initiation, they had to recreate the urban legend of like keeping your headlights off, and then it's like an urban legend that a car goes by with his headlights off, and then the first person that like flips their lights at them to
run them off the road,
yeah, will kill them. Which is again not something I'd heard. Have you guys heard that one?
I'd heard of that one.
Never, but yeah, I had a very sheltered childhood, I think, which this movie reminded me of, because the only urban legend I knew of in this entire movie was Bloody Mary.
I'd like to maybe pause it for a minute that these urban legends are not actually urban legends, but rural legends, because I think Rob probably heard more of these growing up in the country, and Jordan and I had stuff to do in the city.
City kids.
But also, I mean, I feel like in cities, there are actual crimes and horrific things that you know about. You're just like, you don't need urban legends because you're like, look at the fucking news.
But yeah, so like her and her friend, like, were chasing this car and ran it off the road and killed a guy.
Yeah.
Like, is pretty fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all the time when they're talking about this person who died, she's just like, oh yeah, I didn't know that person. It doesn't seem to be like affected.
We don't know, as the audience, we don't understand why. we don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, she similarly doesn't seem to care about her roommate, which, I mean, yeah, okay, she was kind of annoying, but like, presumably you
at
least
one
point, good conversation.
She's already murdered a man, so.
Yeah. Yeah. And then she goes to Stanley Hall and she sees Brenda on the bed, and it looks like she's been murdered, but nope, she sucker punches Natalie in the face, and then and then she's
just Brenda, the
captured.
Secondary character.
And her name, I didn't realize this till looking it up now, her full name is Brenda Bates.
Oh,
that's a little clue that she's the killer.
Oh,
should have known. They never say it. Do they ever say it in the movie? It's just
probably not.
There was a teacher named Mr. Bates at my high school. Do you think he was a killer?
I think probably. He was the killer in this movie.
Like, oh my god.
Brenda Bates' dad.
Oh my god.
We figured it out.
Wow. Yeah. And the security lady comes and tries to save them, and then she shoots the security lady. The security lady shoots her, and then it seems like and then she like falls out of the window or something.
You gotta have a window fall.
Yeah.
And then
also,
and then they all leave, they assume she's dead and drive away. From a crime scene that they are material witnesses to.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't even mentioned the fact that a dog gets murdered in a microwave in this movie. How have we talked
so
this long?
Mad. I blanked it out from my brain. I was so upset.
I kind of like, I don't know. It's upsetting and it's gross.
I like microwaving dogs.
I wish the movie had gone to that extreme more, or gone that bonkers more, but like just having that one, because it actually does get like, it's weird because the opening, like we mentioned, like the Natasha Gregson Warner character gets decapitated, but we don't see it. We see an axe hitting a window. Mm-hmm. But then in the latter part of the movie, it gets quite gruesome, like surprisingly.
Yeah.
So like I was watching it thinking maybe this was a PG-13 for the first half of it.
I read, as I researched this movie, I didn't research it, I'm not a researcher, like, know the difference, right? Vaccines are real, get it. But I was reading about the movie, and it was, the director didn't like left scenes out of the movie because they were too bloody and gruesome, and that makes sense for the first half of the movie, and then all of a sudden we're just seeing full calf tendons, Achilles, just being slashed,
right?
Like, that death is so gruesome out of nowhere.
I mean,
so
I can definitely understand ramping up the gore or gruesomeness, but it does seem to come all at once, and yeah, it's not super great. But yeah,
well, the other thing we didn't talk about, I'm sorry, I just have to put this in here,
okay,
before I forget, is the fact that the killer, you know, it's hard to come up with like what the killer wears to make them distinct, like, you know,
right,
Halloween had the Shatner mask, Scream has the ghost face mask, here they went with a parka.
Yeah.
Jacket.
And yeah, and I don't know if this is true or not, but like on the IMDb trivia, it said that was because it was supposed to be set at winter, and for production reasons they ended up shooting it in the summer, and then they just didn't change it for some reason.
So it's okay. 35 degrees out and the killer just wears a parka.
Yeah. Fire the wardrobe person, that's for sure.
Well, like, it's weird enough to have the killer be walking around in a parka, but then we also have to have all of the scenes where they suspect someone else is the killer because they have a parka. So we have like three other people wearing parkas in like, you know, the middle of June or whatever. It's like, it doesn't make any sense. There's a scene where someone's inside of a swimming pool.
Right.
Wearing a parka.
That was absolutely insane.
You don't wear your parka to the pool?
To keep your muscles warm so you can just do that real good swimming.
And then the janitor, like, he has a parka in his car at one point and freaks out Alicia Witt. Like, why is he keeping that in there? He's not wearing it. Does he just keep it in there year round?
Everybody has that particular parka. It's the hit parka of the season.
Yeah, it's the university uniform.
Yeah.
I mean, I do kind of have a parka like that.
He's a killer. Is green. I am a murderer. I guess.
I'm scared. Yeah.
But there's also no reason. Like, there's no, like, once we find out, yes, Rebecca Gayhart is the killer, like, it's because her boyfriend was the guy that was killed by Natasha Gregson Warner and Alicia Witt. But there's no, like,
this
he
is
was
all
a spear and he always
scene.
Wore a, yeah. But there's no reason why she had to wear a parka. Like, why did she pick that? Wear a mask. Wear a ski mask.
Well, she spent so much time on her plan, all the elaborateness and all the killing that she would have to do. And she got some bonus kills in there. She didn't have time to get a costume.
Or make something up. Say, like, oh, there was an urban legend about a skier who
ghost the parka comes back. Killer.
Yeah, something. But anything.
As I rewrite this movie, I have two things. The first is, make the parka that her boyfriend was wearing.
Yes.
Oh my God.
When he's murdered. Number two, I kind of wish that that book of urban legends in the U section at the university library was a list of urban legends that no one had heard about. And then they have to figure out these like crazy urban legends that make no sense, that aren't even real.
Right.
I think that that would have been fun to write those urban legends.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then she's in the back of the car. Then they sort of drive. She gets knocked out of the car over the bridge, and then she dies. Yeah. And that's
or
she
does
dies.
She?
Or does she?
Oh shit! Should have dropped the transport
well, she shows
on
up,
her.
There's like an epilogue where she shows up at another school where all the students look even older somehow. Like, these guys are like 78
mature students. Yeah. Yeah. But also in the like in movie logic, like this is supposed to be the new class and then she's still going back to school. Like,
well, and
does she need to get some credits
murder.
Or what's happening?
She's taking her time. And listen, Rob, we're all on our own path, right?
Yeah.
So but she has taken her revenge. Like, how is she going to how is she getting her revenge on Natalie by tormenting these? Is like Natalie now a professor at the school?
Oh, I think this
is now professors.
She just realized how much fun it is to murder school administrators for literally no reason.
And that's why the school only has four staff.
Right.
Yeah.
They're all
murdered. Picking them off one by one. Yeah. And that's urban legend. The legend of urban legend.
Yeah.
We'll be back. I got some trivia and some behind the scenes stuff after the break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, welcome back to Rewatchability. We are talking about urban legend with Jordan Armstrong. And I have some questions to stump your brain. Some university level trivia about urban legends and urban legends. See if you can solve these. And maybe I'll let you live.
I haven't murdered anyone. I've never murdered a single person.
Me neither, yet, that I know of.
Ultimately, the character of Natalie is the only person who deserved to die.
Whoa, controversial. Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I don't know if she deserves to die.
Michelle Mancini. Does anyone? Who are we? But
also, no one cares about the people that die. Like, they all make jokes about it. Like, Pacey says something, makes like a joke about like the woman who died giving head, and like when the goth girl dies, someone's like, she looked dead anyway. It's like, what? Who would act like that?
Yeah. Sociopaths.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get to the trivia. Let's get to some happy things. Okay. This one's tricky. I'm going to blow your mind. And also, this is a musician question for Jordan, because Jordan's
no
a musician.
Pressure. Is it about modes or scales?
No, it's not really.
Teach lessons. Is it a question?
What is the mode? Okay. Which actor in this movie is also a musician and has performed with artists such as Randy Newman and Ben Folds?
Well, I mean, Jared Leto is a musician.
Yeah, what's his
name? He has that stupid band.
30 seconds. Is that him? 30 seconds.
Yeah. 30 seconds to Mars. Is that your answer?
I don't know. I don't know if he
with Randy Newman though?
Did Randy Newman open for 30 seconds to Mars?
Randy Newman is
a great tour
of the first episode of Cop Rock.
Famously.
Quietly bowed out of that entire project after episode one.
Okay, well, it's not Jared Leto. He's not the only musician in this movie.
Okay, wait, is Robert Englund a musician?
That's right, no. He probably is. I bet he has like a folk album from the 60s or something.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, he plays auto harp and guitar.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, he was a part of the Village scene. He played with Dave Van Ronk and stuff. No, it is Alicia Witt. She is a musician. She plays music. She has an album, a whole bunch of albums. And also, I didn't say this because it would have totally given it away. She plays on Twin Peaks. She's Gersten Hayward. And she plays
Donna's little sister, right?
That's right. Donna's little sister. Not the one that does the poetry. She's the one that plays the piano. And she plays a little song with Leland Palmer as well.
I want to hear her music.
Yeah, I thought about pulling up a clip, but then I didn't. Sorry.
You could put one in, and then we'll pretend to react to how we felt hearing it, and then we'll listen to it after the episode.
Okay, let's do that.
That sounds great.
I'm bruised again, I wear it well, the self-inflicted tale they tell. I singed my hair, I broke my nails, you'd love me then if all else failed. The night was long and dark and just another dagger to my trust.
Oh, I like
wow.
it.
Oh, interesting.
Really interesting use of the piano. Yeah. I thought that was interesting. She brings out her music in projects like the David Lynch thing. And and she played with Randy Newman on Ally McBeal. That was where she played with Randy Newman.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I thought that was fun. Okay,
imagine so she was in Cop Rock, though. Imagine.
I can. When they got to reboot that, right?
I've tried. I wanted to do a whole stage production, and that's real.
Yeah, but now cops, you don't want to do shows about cops.
I feel like people have been talking about Cop Rock recently for some reason.
I've been talking about it this whole time.
All right.
Okay, second question. And this one's a bit tough, but maybe you'll be able to get it because it has a little bit of local flavor. So name two other movies starring Joshua Jackson, which are also filmed at the University of Toronto.
I don't know one. That I can even name two other movies with Joshua Jackson in them.
Wow. That's disappointing.
Well,
I can tell you one. I thought of that when I was watching it, and that's The Skulls.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
That's right. The Skulls. Yeah. And the second one is Gossip. Did you guys see that one? Gossip?
No.
Me neither. I don't think it was a very big movie. It was done by Davis Guggenheim, the guy who did that Al Gore documentary.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've got a bonus tidbit for you, and that's he shot something else at U of T. It's not a movie, And what that did he shoot? Was the pilot for
Fringe.
Yeah, the pilot for Fringe.
Right. Yes, that's right. I remember now.
Yeah, before they moved to like Vancouver or wherever they filmed the show, the pilot was shot here, and they used UFT for, you know, wherever Walter was supposed to be.
So, that's right. You get a bonus point for that.
All right.
I'm not asking for any bonus points, but I do want to ask for a quick second to shout out my movie watching group, because the first movie we watched, I didn't watch it. I wasn't there that night. I was having a bad day. But at the start of the pandemic, the first movie they watched was Skulls, one of the first ones.
Wow.
And that has become an inside joke in all of our chats. And there's a big group of people watching movies every Friday. We're watching one tonight. I don't know what movie we're watching yet tonight, but they're the
You're watching one later tonight?
Yeah. And I'm going to
tell them.
What
time do you watch these movies?
Like 10:30 later.
Okay.
Sometimes.
It's late.
We're night owls. We don't have to. They're not gonna wait for me. But
you're gonna
miss
the beginning of Skulls.
Skulls 3.
Rewatching Skulls 3 tonight.
The Skulls Movie Club.
It's
a secret society. Okay, so this one, you might, JM, I think you might already have this one. Which horror reboot features Brad Dourif and Danielle Harris playing father and daughter? It's a horror reboot.
Oh, I was just going to say duets.
Duets. Okay. The hint is the director of that film can be heard in this movie as well, in a way.
Can be heard?
Can be heard through the ears.
Tara Reid directed a...
That's right. Musically, you might say. Musically.
Randy Newman directed...
Okay. That was tough. I thought you would get it because you already mentioned that Danielle Harris was in the Halloween franchise and the later Halloween movies. So that's what I was talking about. Halloween, the Rob Zombie Halloween movies.
Oh. Wait, they're in that?
They are, yeah.
I've never seen the Rob Zombie Halloween.
Me neither. Movies. Me neither. But I thought it was interesting that they were both in that movie and connected and like actually connected. And of course, this being a movie that takes place in the late 90s, early 2000s, it definitely does have a Rob Zombie song in it, which the goth roommate is listening to at one point.
On goths.com.
On Gothify. It's all...
Whoa, what was the song? They played it and the guy at the party was like, that's a real murder scream.
Roller Coaster of Love.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that real?
I don't know.
Is that an urban legend?
Yeah, I was wondering that too, and I forgot to look it up. That guy was an authentically creepy party guy.
Yeah.
That guy felt the most real.
Oh my God,
can you imagine if that guy turned out to be the murderer at the end? And like, oh my God, it was that guy at the party who was just kind of douchey. Yeah.
That's how he records all of his murder screams and inserts them into songs at parties.
That makes so much sense.
That would have been amazing.
We have to clear Brenda's name.
Let's get Brenda on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, apropos of nothing, Julian Riching's character is credited as just weird janitor, which is
not
really
cool.
Great. Not cool, not like just random or just janitor. Yeah.
Just janitor. Just like custodian, maybe. I mean, it's a proud job.
Master of
you
the
know?
Custodial arts / professor.
By default, he is probably like the vice president of that school.
Yeah.
He ran the newspaper.
Right. It's like when John Neville's like, I called your editor today, you know, the janitor.
Also, somebody vomited over there. Clean that up. Well, this movie was, believe it or not, inspired by Scream. And
a broken telephone of Scream.
It sort of is. I mean, the writer Silvio Holte, my handwriting's really bad, by the way. He was working at the perfume counter at Nordstrom when he got this idea and started writing it. And he would later go on to adapt or develop Ugly Betty.
Yeah.
The American version.
Silvio Horta.
Yeah, that's how you say it.
Yeah. And he sadly passed away just last year.
Yeah, that was really sad.
It's tragic.
absolutely.
I mean, this was one of his. This was one of his early projects. This is clearly not, you know, his masterpiece. I think it was a horror movie that he pitched because Scream was a success, and you know, absolutely, that helped him launch his very successful television career.
For sure. And this is like what people were buying at the time, like for teen movies. I mean, so yeah, it makes total sense. Even though, you know, I think that we can be critical about the film in general, I think it is still like a, you know, it's still an achievement.
And there are worse horror movies from this time, I think. Like, it's not, it's flawed in all the ways we've talked about, but it doesn't, like, it's not boring. Like, it's pretty engaging.
And mm-hmm. The poser is like a big deal, especially in horror.
Yeah,
he's
that's
like the
right.
Hellraiser guy. He's like the, that's, I don't know anymore.
Christopher Young.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wanted to do a very synth-heavy score for this, sort of inspired by Halloween and all of those John Carpenter-type movies, but they insisted on a more orchestral score. But
it's probably for the best, because he's not a synth guy. He's no Hans Zimmer.
But who is?
Well, you know what's also
Hans
weird
is? Hans Zimmer is.
Speaking of composers.
Well, and his apprentices.
The director, Jamie Blanks, is also a composer. Did you
oh,
see
is
that?
He?
He has far more credits on IMDb as a composer than as a director. And then weirdly, the sequel, Urban Legends Final Cut, was directed by John Ottman, who is like Bryan Singer's composer. Like, he did the usual.
Oh, weird.
And X-Men 2 and Superman
so maybe
Returns.
Is it that composers shouldn't direct movies, or
it's that they should only direct Urban Legends movies, I guess.
That's interesting. Yeah, there was two sequels to this movie, as you said, Urban Legends Final Cut. They called it that because they edited it on Final Cut, and
Urban Legends Avid Pro.
Well, Adobe Suite.
It is funny that like the first, or this movie, you know, is clearly like, hey, let's take the framework of Scream, but instead of horror movies, it'll be Urban Legends. And then in the second movie, they're like, ah, let's just make it about movies again. So it's about like a filmmaker and movie making. I don't know. Yeah,
what can you do?
The original working title was Urban Legend 2. Scream 2.
The third movie in the trilogy, Urban Legends Bloody Mary, is the movie that introduces both of the Mara sisters, Kate and Rooney, but was also, interestingly enough, directed by Mary Lambert, who directed Pet Sematary.
Yeah.
Like, that was a pretty big movie. What's she doing directing that crap?
Totally,
same composer as Urban Legend.
Ooh.
Wikipedia reveals all.
Yeah. And this movie was a big success. I mean, it grossed $72.5 million worldwide off a budget of $14 million. I think that adds up. And yeah, it was huge. Oh, I also forgot to mention, just on IMDb, below Urban Legends Final Cut is something that says Sexy Urban Legends. I don't think it's connected. But maybe it is.
Well, Tara Reid's character has that whole show, that whole radio show.
Yeah. And
she does get murdered, or does she live? I forget.
She does get murdered. Yeah, she gets. I mean, this scene's amazing because she's on the air and she gets attacked. Yeah. And then she's running around with like the headset on.
Yeah, why
does
she have that headset?
But it's still broadcasting.
I know that blew my mind. It took me an hour to just set up to record this podcast tonight. And yet in 1998, she's running around broadcasting off of a mic. Like, what?
But also no one goes to help her. There's no one there. It's not like
they say it's like a performance art.
Well, they murder the guy. They murder the one guy.
But there's, why is it like, again, there's one campus security guard for this entire school. And
get
she
another security guard.
And it's not like, I mean, I could understand maybe if they were like, it's Christmas break and most of the students have gone home.
Well,
like,
as we discussed,
nothing like that.
With the parka, it was supposed to take place.
Yes.
It was supposed to be Home Alone. And the score would have been so different. It would have been just completely different.
Or if it had been Christmas. I mean,
a Christmas movie, horror movie is wonderful. And a Christmas urban legend Like, maybe we need to write Urban Legend Holiday Edition.
It would have been perfect because Black Christmas also filmed at U of T.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That would have been great.
She's, yeah, she's like, no one goes to help her except for Alicia Witt.
Does she really gets murdered? How does she die? Because doesn't she end up in the car? Isn't that her in the car with the janitor? Or no,
that's Alicia Witt.
Yeah. Oh.
She gets murdered kind of off screen. Mm-hmm. She gets cornered by.
They don't show it. They just show the killer swinging the axe through the window.
She's the only one who puts up an actual fight. Like, she falls off stairs or like whatever.
She's kind of the most interesting character in the whole movie.
It should have
She should have been the star.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
But I don't remember her getting murdered, so.
They did think about some other people for the star of this movie. They asked Sarah Michelle Gellar, and she actually accepted the role, but she had to turn it down to do Cruel Intentions and Buffy.
Vampires. Oh, but Pacey did it.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, there were so many teen movies being shot and teen shows at this time. Like, it seems like I don't know how these people had any time. Like, they're all in all these other movies. Like, everybody in this movie is in, like, another movie that came out exactly at the same time, whether it's Cruel Intentions, whether it's Scream 2.
All filmed at U of T. That's it.
Yeah, that was it. It was like a mill for teen movies. They were just churning them out. They also asked Melissa Joan Hart, obviously, Sabrina. Jennifer Love Hewitt turned it down because she had just done I Know What You Did Last Summer and she didn't want to get typecast. They asked Reese Witherspoon. They asked her and she was like, no.
No, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they got the people that they got. And that's pretty much everything I found about... Oh, the one thing that we should talk about...
Oh,
and,
yeah. I think I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even know this, but you told me about this. And this is an urban legend in itself. Or is this movie an urban legend? Does it even exist? What's happening?
What did I watch twice?
Did you see this interview with Jared Leto, Jordan? I feel like it makes the rounds on the internet every so often, but I did see it again recently. And that was that in 2002, IGN was interviewing Jared Leto and they brought up urban legend. And maybe I should just read it. But he basically pretends like he doesn't know what it is.
May I play a clip?
So I don't think it's a video interview.
Oh, shit.
They say...
is where we'll put another song. Right.
From 30 Seconds to Mars.
From yeah.
They say when you did
Seconds to Mars.
They say when you did the movie Urban Legend. He says, what's that? That horror flick you did back in 1998. I didn't do that. Yeah, you did. You were the college newspaper reporter. I was? Yeah. Get the fuck out of here. What are you talking about? Laughs. Urban Legend, dude. That horror movie about urban myths with Rebecca Gayhart. I don't even remember that.
He's gaslighting.
He is. Okay. Obviously, it wasn't that good of an experience then. Laughs. I don't even know what you're talking about, dude. It keeps going. You were the damn lead. You were the college newspaper reporter, and all the kids in school were dying around you. That's so weird. I've never even heard of that movie. You're kidding, right? No. All right, dude. Laughs. Seems like you've erased a minor historical footnote in your burgeoning film career. I must have had a blackout. Laughs. I guess we're allowed one of those. Yeah. Laughs. You live and you learn. You know what I mean?
I want reading of that at Convocation Hall. That's the first show I want to go see post-pandemic.
We'll make Nick that Cave happen. Reads the...
Yes. That'd be good. Wow. That is... I mean, Jared Leto is just such a weirdo. I mean, he's so performatively weird. I think that's the thing. He's such an asshole. He's just performing weird. And maybe that's part of it. I don't know what the point is. I mean, maybe it's kind of like he's having fun with it. Like, yeah, maybe like gaslighting somebody about the fact that
if that's saying you're not fun, though, that just makes you an asshole.
I don't think anybody's disputing that Jared Leto's an asshole.
Wait, does he get murdered? I don't remember his murder.
No. He survives.
Yeah, because because she has a crush on him, the murderer. And they want to be together.
Oh, yeah.
Have babies.
See, you know, he's not bad in this movie. He's probably one of the better actors in this movie.
Yeah, yeah, he's okay.
Tara Reid, honestly, the movie should have just been them.
But I will say, whoever told Jared Leto at the time, like, hey, you're pretty good in this, created a monster.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's Urban Legend. Why don't we go around and see what we all thought about it? Jordan, let's start with you. You're the guest. What did it feel like this time?
I think that I really wanted to like it because I've newly discovered a love of scary movies and I feel so brave when I watch them and I don't have nightmares. But I also think that it speaks volumes that I didn't remember that I had seen this as a teenager until the final scene when I was like, oh, she's going to sit up from the bed. That's when I remembered and all the memories came flooding back. So I don't know. I don't know if that says great things about the film.
Do you think you would watch this again under any circumstances?
Yeah, I would. Okay. Mostly because them finding that encyclopedia under the U section is truly so great. And I'm
here's the part where they find the encyclopedia.
I wonder what it would be like to watch the whole thing again, knowing who the murderer is.
I watched it again, knowing who the murderer was. And I mean, it's interesting to see whether it fits together. And I guess it sort of does, like the motivation, until she starts killing all the random people. It's like, you just have a problem now. You've totally lost the plot.
Okay, so maybe I wouldn't watch it all again, but I would watch that first scene again because it was quite good.
That's fair. Okay, what about you, JM?
Yeah, I don't know. I had a good time watching it. I'm not going to lie. But for all the reasons we've talked about, it's pretty silly. And also, you know, it is so desperately trying to be Scream. Like, it's so Scream. There's not a part of Scream that's not replicated here to some extent. To the, you know, like I was saying before, like they collapse characters from Scream into characters in this movie. Like I said, like the Lex Luthor guy is basically Matthew Lillard and Jamie Kennedy together. You know, Jared Leto is basically Skeet Ulrich and Courtney Cox smushed into one.
That's
and then
kind
Alicia
of hot.
That makes sense, actually.
Hot.
That is kind of what he looks like.
And Alicia Witt is trying to do like a Neve Campbell heroine. I mean, I think, you know, it does make me appreciate Scream more in a way, because I think one thing that was maybe overlooked about what made that film such a huge success, apart from like the smart screenplay and the direction and, you know, all of that, it was also like this casting, like that they found this interesting cast of characters that worked in those roles. Like I don't think many of the people in this movie like work. Like I think there was probably a mentality at the time where it's like, hey, let's get a bunch of like, you know, cool hip young actors and we'll throw them into a slasher movie and it'll be fun. But if they don't suit those roles, then it just doesn't work. And I don't think this movie really works. But again, like I said, it's not boring, it's kind of silly and nostalgic. So yeah, I had a good time watching it, even though I think it is fairly
ridiculous.
It
gets a good rating for its potential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there was talk of a reboot really recently.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
they were, it's going to be
just last year.
It was going to be directed by a guy. I can't read this. But it was going to be directed by a guy.
Why can't you read anything you've written?
I don't know.
Yeah, I would actually be down for a reboot of this. Like, I
think it could be good.
Yeah, like I think that there was some untapped potential in the premise.
Colin Minhan, that's his name. He directed a movie called Grave Encounters.
Is he a composer?
He better be. I'm going to look it up. Who is this guy?
You have to conduct the music of horror.
Orchestrally. No synth.
No sense.
So yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like it's not a good movie. It is deeply flawed. But if you're looking for, you know, a fun, silly 90s slasher movie, and you've already watched Screaming and Ninja last summer,
it was great for our movie night.
Yeah, I would say it's so dumb, but I did have a good time watching it. So mildly rewatchable. What about you, Rob?
Yeah, I also feel similarly. I mean, some parts were kind of dumb fun. These movies are kind of fun. It's fun to see people get murdered in silly ways sometimes. You know, it seems like they deserve it because of these things or another. And, you know,
yeah,
it's kind of
dog,
okay.
Right? Like, good riddance.
Some of the murders were kind of fun, like the guy who gets the Drano beer bong down his throat. That's,
oh, that was wild. Who was that?
I think that was
Lex
Parker.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
But there were so many things that I found really dumb about it, and I found really hard to get past. That thing about the axe not having enough room to swing.
Right.
The thing about her still broadcasting while she's running around campus.
That makes no sense.
So, and I don't know. I'm also just... I only have limited capacity for these teenage stories about teenagers because teenagers are kind of dumb, and you have to sort of accept that to accept them as protagonists. And I think like this movie doesn't, it's not terrible. And, you know, I think that it sort of captures like a little bit of like the university experience, I guess, particularly my university experience since I went to that school.
But... Was your university 2/3 empty all the time?
It was. Okay. I think people were dying.
They were covering up so many murders that didn't even happen on campus. Like half the students, more than half, were beheaded on highways. And that's why.
Yeah, but that's not on campus, so it doesn't count.
It doesn't count. It does in this movie, but it shouldn't count.
Yeah, I would say I'm probably not going to watch this again. I don't know. It's mildly rewatchable. It's like an imitation. You're right. It's an imitation of Scream, but like it's a palatable imitation. It goes down okay.
Like I look at like things like Riverdale or things like like movies now that are all just like oddly evocative reverb based covers of great songs mostly throughout them and like sexy teens, but they're in their 20s. So we, as teens, we got to watch 35-year-olds play us. How do you feel like that affected you? Like we watched old people, we watched people our age play teenagers, and now teenagers are playing teenagers, but they're so much more sexy and knowledgeable than we ever were.
I mean, there's also like the sort of lengthening of adolescence that is happening like in society, but I totally feel like they were always older than me, and I would never grow up and reach however old they were, you know, like when the people who played high schoolers were in high school, when I was in high school, I was still like a kid compared to those people. When I was right. in university, I still felt like a kid compared to those people.
I still feel
so
like
on.
The kids in Riverdale are older than me, and I'm a child compared to them.
Well,
I'm sitting here in a Snoopy t-shirt. Like, I don't, where do I fit into that world?
Jughead would wear a Snoopy t-shirt, I feel like. And that's rewatchability for this week. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, or you can rate us and leave a little review. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
Oh, Rob, wait, I wanted to plug something.
What?
I'm doing a marathon, like a charity marathon.
Ooh.
Oh, my God.
And,
that's amazing.
Are you training?
Well, here's
no,
the thing.
No training. He's just going to go for it.
It's a movie watching marathon.
Oh.
So it won't end with me coughing up blood on like
it might. It might though.
Good.
It might.
Good.
It depends on the movie, but it's through the Fox Theater, which is a great independent cinema here in Toronto.
That's right and, by me.
Yeah, right by where Jordan lives.
You come over.
If any axe wielding maniacs listening to the show.
I'm very lonely. I'll take double axe wielding maniacs.
But yeah, so I have entered myself into this marathon because I figured, you know, I've always watched other people do charity marathons where they're running a bunch, and I can't do that. But I, you know, I've been training for this my whole life.
You could.
I can sit and watch movies all day. They've encouraged people to do at least four. So I'm going to do at least four, maybe more movies at the end of the month. And you can pledge money and donate. Half the money goes to the Fox. Half the money goes to Cystic Fibrosis Canada. And you do that if you go to shop.foxtheater.ca, you'll see an option to donate to the marathon. And if you put my name in the special instructions field when you donate, that money gets tabulated under my name. But again, that it doesn't really matter. But yeah, I wanted to let people know about that. I'll be doing that at the end of the month. I'll probably bring it up on the next podcast too. Yeah.
Neat.
That's great.
Yeah, go do that. Yeah, that's a great theater.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And good cause. And we'll be back next week with another movie. And until then,
the role of Jordan Armstrong will be played by Blaine Waters.
Yeah, and he better practice his acting because
I pulled my weight. I carried this episode, I think, acting wise.
Absolutely.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.